All right. Ready?
This I'll ever be.
Okay. Hi, and welcome to episode 22 of OTTB on Tap. I'm Neve.
And I'm Emily. Hey, Neve, what's on tap today?
It's been a busy couple of weeks for Thoroughbreds, and we thought it would be really fun to recap some of the highlights. But before we get started on the episode, we want to give a really special shout out to our listener, Megan from Montana, who sent us the most heartfelt email this week, and also to our listener, Loon, in Belgium. I'm really sorry, Loon, if I'm pronouncing that incorrectly, who reached out during her process of acquiring her first OTTB. And we got to learn a little bit about the process of acquiring a thoroughbred in Belgium, which was really cool. And we really appreciate each and every message and comment that we receive. So please don't hesitate to reach out to us. We really enjoy it.
Yeah. I mean, every time we get a comment or a review or anything like that, we're like, ooh, this is so cool. So thank you.
It makes our whole day. It's awesome. Well, first up, let's talk about Defender Kentucky 3-Day. Nailed it, right?
I think so. Yeah. So in the 4-star, if you were listening a couple episodes ago, we had interviewed our old friend Heather Gillette about her OTTB Vincent Chase. They had a really lovely dressage test. And unfortunately, they were early out on the course. And one of the early fences was a coffin jump, which was a very kind of upright hanging rail that you could see underneath with a very steep downward slope to a big ditch, and then a steep slope up to a narrow house, and then a very angled brush narrow fence. So it was a very, very tricky
fence. Yeah, it was pretty wicked.
And unfortunately, they ended up calling it a day at that jump, and I think they've rerouted on from there. But they're happy and healthy and, you know, ready to fight another day.
Yeah, I think that coffin came on a little bit of a blind turn. It seemed to catch a lot of riders out in the 4-star. A lot of horses just didn't seem to read it very well. And I felt like the riders that did get through it did so on the seat of their pants a little bit. No, there are very few people that made it look straightforward or simple. So 4-star, there were a ton of off-the-track thoroughbreds, which we were really excited to see. It was a banner day for thoroughbreds at Kentucky as a whole. In the 4-star, we had Fly Me Courageous, ridden by Janelle Fleming. He was 18 years old, so a really experienced horse that gave Janelle her first experience at Kentucky, which must be an incredible honor to ride a horse like that around the Kentucky Horse Park. And then we had Sea of Clouds, who was also quite experienced with Olivia Dutton. They ended up placing 13th, which was huge. My favorite of the entire group was the little horse High Tide, ridden by Rachel Lawson. They have a really, really cool story, and I'm going to link to an article about them. But this was her very first off-the-track thoroughbred. Now she pretty much exclusively works with off-the-track thoroughbreds, but she's taken him from his first rides all the way up through Kentucky. And he's known for being pretty notoriously difficult. And I think it's been quite a challenge, but their partnership is so, so special. And I think that a lot of people were crying at the end of their dressage test. It was very, very sweet. And then we had Lovely Assistant, ridden by Hannah Bundy. Cool story about this mare is that she's by Colonel John, and we happen to have a very cool, very athletic and talented mare in our barn who's also by Colonel John. And the horse just has talent for days. It's very cool. So I've heard nothing but good things about that offspring. And so it's really neat to see another one at the top level. And then who else do we have in the 4-star? Melanie Smith and Shakedown Street. They were one of the smallest horses in the field, and they finished 26th with a clear cross country. And Jen Moody and Eye of the Storm also completed their first trip around the Kentucky Horse Park.
Not only were there a lot of thoroughbreds, seems like kind of a resurgence this year with a ton in at least the 4-star, but a lot of smaller horses too, including I think there was an actual pony in the 4-star as well. So kind of interesting. Yeah. You know, the trend for so long was I need the biggest horse I can possibly get. And now it seems like people are more open to evaluating the horse on their talent and not just their size.
Yeah. And I think when the horses are bigger, they can be harder to keep sound. So I think maybe people are realizing it might be a little bit easier to keep these horses competing at the top levels when they're a little bit more compact. And then we had the 5-star, which was really exciting. In the top 20 finishers, there were 6 off-the-track thoroughbreds.
Yeah. And Jenny Branigan really captured the hearts of everybody when she came off the cross-country course with Twilight's Last Gleam and made some very passionate comments about, you know, vetting of the horse doesn't matter, the heart matters and how great thoroughbreds are. And you don't ride the x-rays for sure. I don't think she actually said that, but that was kind of the implication that even if you don't have millions of dollars to go out and buy a fancy imported horse, you can take a thoroughbred and train it up the levels and jump it around the Kentucky 5-star. And they ended up in 16th place.
Yeah, it was really cool. Emily and I actually watched Kentucky together and we were just both just looking at each other like, oh my God, when she was just like, giving her interview.
Why because is it nobody was recording this?
Yeah. I think that it's just really cool to hear riders at that level recognize that and just want to shout it from the rooftops, you know. Kind of on the same token was Joe Meyer with his little gray horse, Harbin. They finished 14th with no jump faults in either phase. They had a little time, I think, in both. This little horse is so cool. He's got quite an exuberant way of going. He has a very high stepping action. And I don't know if the dressage judges love him that much, but he's very, very cute. And it's really sweet. I'll post a link to another article with Joe in the notes. But Joe Meyer's big horse was a horse named Snip. And Joe says that Harbin reminds him just so, so much of Snip. And it must be very cool to find that second horse in your lifetime that is just incredible.
Yeah, for sure. Another really great story is Mia Farley and her thoroughbred Phelps. And they were the only combination to have a double clear cross-country round. They ended up in 13th place. This is only their second 5-star. They were also double clear at Maryland last fall. So really great things to come from that pair. And there have been a couple stories circulating on Facebook and around about that horse and his start and his upbringing and stuff like that. So it's very, very cool. Another small horse too. I think he's only 15.3.
Yeah. And she rides like this is her second time on planet Earth. She is just such a professional. She gets so much out of him in each phase. I think show jumping is definitely the toughest phase for him, but she's a beautiful rider on the flat, and watching them go cross country is nothing short of inspirational. It's really very cool to see.
She makes it look very easy.
Yes. Yeah, he really does. And then Buck and Sir Kama, they came in 6th. I think they had one of the few clear show jump rounds. I know that he's worked really hard on getting that horse to this level. And so that's exciting to see. And my favorite horse, my favorite of the whole bunch, and I'm dying to have her on the podcast, is Monica Spencer, who has moved her entire operation from New Zealand to the U.S. to hopefully have her eye on the Olympics with her horse Artist, who's an off-track thoroughbred. He's just a machine. He's such a cool horse. I remember seeing him at Maryland 5-star last year and being like, who is that horse? Oh my God. And I've been obsessed with him ever since. So very, very cool. They finished 7th. And I'm very excited to see her in her journey in the U.S. And we're happy to have her here.
Yeah. So what a great turnout. I mean, really cool. Next, we just have to get an OTTB to win one of these big competitions.
Yeah. Yeah. And then everyone's going to be fighting for them all over again. Right. And another big thing that happened is the 150th running of the Kentucky Derby was pretty exciting to watch. It's the first three-way photo finish since 1947. It was definitely a nail biter. It was really exciting to watch.
Yeah. My internet went out as they were coming down the home stretch. And so I was I was texting you in June. I was like, what happened? My internet went out. I can't see.
This is such bad timing.
I had to rewatch it. I know. I was really bummed, but it was very cool.
Well, yeah, they had to go to like the overhead photo and everything to figure out. I think the horse that won, Mystic Dan, won by like a flared nostril.
Yeah. No, it was really incredible. I know there'd been a little bit of talk about interference throughout the race. And I just think when you have, what were there, 21 or something starters mm-hmm. of young thoroughbreds and you put them all on the racetrack at the same time, pretty impossible to have a totally clean race. But it seems like everybody was happy with the final outcome and results.
Yeah. I think that what a lot of people don't understand is sometimes when those horses do unintentionally bump into each other, it's the rider's responsibility to make sure that there isn't a chain reaction from that effect. And so a lot of what you see on the screen is them trying to actually get themselves sort of untangled from the other horse. And it can look mm-hmm. like they're doing something intentional when it's really just, let's not have a pile up on the track.
Stay on our feet, please.
Yeah, exactly. Because if you've ever seen the horses that catch each other's heels or something on the track, it can be really devastating and involve a lot more horses than just the two that bumped into each other. So, and then what else did we do? Oh, Emily and I went to audit the Lucinda Green Clinic down at Lochmoy in Maryland. It was really cool to go down. I rode in this clinic last year and it was incredible. And so we thought it would just be fun to actually go and watch the clinic, talk to some of the riders on off-the-track thoroughbreds. There were about 20 people that participated in four different groups, and at least eight of them were off-the-track thoroughbreds. And so we are going to be interviewing, I think, four or five of those riders, one of which we already interviewed in our William Fox Pitt episode, Taylor. Hi, Taylor. If you've never ridden with Lucinda or seen her teach, she is just such a generous clinician. She is extremely hands-on from everything from tack to shoes to riders. There's kind of too much to talk about really in terms of that.
I think you can sum it up with Neve telling me that she travels around with like shopping bags full of tack and equipment and bits. And that's literally like her luggage. And she brings it everywhere she goes. Yeah. And
right. She goes, go into my green shopping bag. There's a Waterford full cheek in there. Go put it on your horse. I've got an elastic running martingale. Go put that one on your horse.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And it's great to see that you can.
It's time to get organized this new year with Menards. Update your closet system and add style today with Closet Culture. Choose from two closet finishes and four colors of shelf boards to create a functional yet stylish closet solution that matches your home decor. Check out all our Closet Culture closet kits or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com to see all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. And make those changes while you have such an experienced person helping you, rather than just saying, you know what, I think would work for your horse, but they don't have it on hand and you have to go buy it and whatever. This way you can try it out and see if you like it. She's not trying to sell you anything. It's basically just her knowledge of what she's used on many, many horses over the years.
So the first day she did a footwork exercises where the jumps were quite small and they developed the horse's accuracy and quick thinking throughout these exercises. That was really cool to see. Some horses really struggled. Some riders really struggled. It's kind of a nice reminder. And I thought the same thing when I audited the William Fox Pitt Clinic, but that if you skip the basics and the foundation work, the holes come out pretty blatantly when you're asked to do something in a pressure cooker situation like a clinic. And that was obvious with some horses, and some horses got better as the clinic went on, and some of them got a little frustrated. One thing I really appreciate about her is that she's not big on drilling exercises. Yeah. If you do something, and even if it was scrappy, she doesn't want you to come back and try to get it perfect, because I think what she's really trying to create with the riders that she works with is riders who are independent thinkers, horses that have good footwork and can kind of get themselves out of trouble. There's a strong implication that American riders have a tendency to want everything to look really pretty and nice and fluid. And I think that her British standpoint of you're just trying to get the activity done is what makes a good cross-country rider really ultimately.
Yeah. And I think too, you know, if you get through it, and she occasionally did have somebody repeat an exercise if it was really rough, but for the most part it was under, over, or through the jump. Get to the other side. You're in one piece. Okay, keep going. You know, don't dwell on what just happened. You have another jump to ride and and keep going. And that's what happens when you're out there on a big course. You can't go back and do it again, you know? You've got one shot.
Yeah. Yeah, and William was really big on that as well. He's like, I mean, you should train like you're at a show because you get one chance to get over the jump.
Yeah.
She's got a great quote that she likes to preface by saying, this might hurt some of your feelings, but this is something that I live by. And that's, if you have a run out, you can't ride. And if you have a stop, you can't kick. And keeping the jump so small was intentional because she wanted you to reinforce that. So if you had a stop, she was like, the horse can literally walk over that.
Right.
And it's good in a way to be in a situation like that, because I think that if you're at home, your tendency is to maybe I'll circle back, I'll come back to it. But she was big on the back your horse up a couple steps and go from there. And William actually did the same thing as well. So
she was interesting how she really applied science and perception of the horse's vision to it as well, because if mm-hmm. they stopped and they were too close to whatever the obstacle was. So a lot of the work that they did was around two different water jumps. But if the horse stopped and they were on the edge of the water and maybe there was a small jump there, she had them back the horse up so that they could actually put their head down and take a look at the jump, because her yeah. feeling was they were too close to it. They couldn't see what the question was, and give them a chance to take a look. And then, okay. And probably more than 9 times out of 10, that approach really worked. But you weren't turning the horse yeah. away, going, doing a big circle and getting your gallop going. It was very much, no, back up 2 or 3 steps. Okay, go.
Yeah. Yeah. It was pretty fascinating too, because I felt like when she would have riders do that, she'd actually have them almost drop the reins mm-hmm. completely and just keep the horse between their legs and let the horse take them over the obstacle. And they all did it. It was kind of wild to see, because I think as riders, we try to do too much and we try to direct too mm-hmm. much. And really, you want your horse to be taking you over fences and obstacles and things like that. She wants it to feel pretty uncomfortable sometimes, I think.
Yeah, I wrote a couple notes down too, to bring back to the thoroughbreds. She clearly is such a thoroughbred fan. And
oh, a couple yeah.
of the things that she said were, you know, you have to be prepared to be a bit tougher when you ride a warm blood. And she said it was interesting to her that warm bloods spook way more than thoroughbreds. And then she went on to say it might have to go with the fact that they wore blinkers for hundreds of years. So she was big on kind of the way that horses had been bred for hundreds, if not thousands of years, and what that's produced into what you're riding today.
Yeah, that was pretty fascinating.
And then finally, this is not related to that, but you have to have a little swear word in you. Never lose your temper, but effing do it. I thought that was great.
Yeah. My experience riding with her is that she's incredibly fair. She's tough when she needs to be. But what's really cool about riding with her is that you wear a little earpiece. So it's like having her in your back pocket. And she, like I said, is incredibly hands-on. She's always paying attention. She's riding along with you and supporting you and giving you really great feedback. She is such a thoroughbred fan. Every time somebody was on a racehorse, she'd be like, oh, and the one with the pom-pom on the little racehorse. And we did get to interview her for the podcast. So that's going to be coming up soon. You'll probably see it on social media. But she was very short on time. And the organizer, Carolyn at Lockmoy, was just so gracious and set up the time for me to interview her. And we went to interview her after lunch. And she said, well, I've got 8 minutes. That's all you've got. And she was obviously in a rush. She was putting on her socks and shoes when we saw her. And I said, okay, well, I'm with this podcast and blah, blah, blah. And I'm going to pick your brain a little bit about thoroughbreds. And boy, did her eyes light yeah. up like a kid on Christmas. She was like, well, if you had just told me that.
Yeah. And then she kept talking. So, I think she went over her allotted time.
Yeah, yeah. Once she got going, she just looked like we could have just sat there for hours. She was so gracious. And yeah, it was more than I could have ever asked for. And I think that all of us that were sitting in that little office had goosebumps mm-hmm. listening to her recount her stories with thoroughbred. So look forward to sharing that with all of you guys. And then last but not least, we had this last weekend, Badminton's 75th running. And it was a wicked course designed by Eric Winter.
Yeah.
And we had 2 notable off-the-track thoroughbreds that were over there competing, Megan O'Donohue and Palm Crescent, who I believe is 18.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, running. We got to see them at Burley a few years ago. which was really a thrill. She's had such a great track record with him. He originally came off of CANTER, which is an organization that helps connect horses on the track with buyers, which is a really cool little backstory on him. But now she's done a great job training him, and they have such a wonderful partnership. Really fun to watch.
Yeah, I think sometimes she'll post his original listing photo.
Oh, yeah.
And I think I want to see if I can dig it up because it's pretty remarkable. Yeah. And like, you just look at it and you're like, that's a 5-star horse? Okay. But I think she saw something really special in him. And I think he just kept answering every question she put in front of him when he was coming up through the levels. And I know his groom just adores him. And they unfortunately had a parting of ways at the Sunken Road, which really seemed to trip up a lot of riders. There were two routes that you could take to it. The longer route being you went around this tree. Not a lot of riders chose that route. It's actually the same jump that Boyd had a lot of trouble with. And I think it just caught the horses off guard and they didn't read the question. A little bit like the 4-star Coffin at Kentucky. And then Jessica Phoenix and Wabbit, they placed 30th, and they are just so cool to watch go cross country. He is a machine. I'm going to post an article with this episode as well, but it kind of reminds me of how you talked about Alex.
Yeah.
In that once she started going cross country with him, she's like, this horse lives for cross country. She's like, I leave the start box. He's looking for the flags. He's the best cross country horse I've ever sat on.
Yeah. And I think she has also brought along quite a number of thoroughbreds as well. And then maybe the biggest news that came out of badminton was that kind of bittersweet, but William Fox Pitt, who you may remember from our clinic recap a few episodes ago, and also Neve's phenomenal interview with him, but he has announced that is his last badminton, in fact, his last 5-star, and he's retiring from upper level eventing. And I have to say, good on him. I think he says he's 55 years old. The sport is tough on your body. It's tough on just the mental ability. And also, he came back from a very, very serious accident where he had a concussion. I believe he was in a coma for a while. And he came back years ago from that. So I think it's great that he was able to retire on top. And I'm sure that's not the last we'll hear from him. But very fond farewell.
Yeah. When Emily and I were at Burley, Pippa Funnel won, and I was sobbing because she was my childhood idol. And then they did Mark Todd's retirement ceremony, and there was not a dry eye in that arena. Like, everybody was just in awe. He tried to give a speech, and he could barely get the words out, and it was really incredible. So I don't know, maybe I have to go to Burley again, and maybe William will do his retirement ceremony there.
It's a good excuse.
Yeah, exactly. For the podcast now.
Yeah. Awesome. So what's next? We talked a little bit about the Lucinda Green participants interviews. So we'll be having that in a few sessions. Also the Lucinda interview that Neve has gotten so proficient at. And then last but not least, we want to remind everybody about our retired racehorse project trainers. So we have gotten the first full episodes for Annika and Lauren. Those are episodes 20 and 21. Really interesting to have a really diverse group of trainers this year. I know that currently we've been focused a lot on eventing, but Annika has both the dressage principles and Western riding. So really interesting. Plus she's retraining two former broodmares. So they had quite a long time off after their race careers, and that has some challenges, along with wintering them in Fargo, North Dakota. And then Lauren has a really interesting holistic approach that she's been taking with her very first mare that she's retraining in dressage and I think maybe in trail. So check those episodes out if you haven't already. But also, we have two more coming soon. We'll have Chelsea and Julianne. So we'll be checking in with them in the next few weeks and getting their episodes posted as well.
So stay tuned for that. Thanks so much for joining us again. I hope you really liked the Thoroughbred Roundup episode. If you liked what you heard today, please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. You can find OTTB on tap on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. Reach out to us with interview candidates and topic suggestions on our website, OTTBontap.com. Sign up for our newsletter to be the first to find out about upcoming episodes, bonus content, and much more. We love hearing from you. Bye.
Thanks all. Bye.